is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is Dr. Gregory Pinto, Bahamian urologist, and this is The Urologist Speaks. I have my co-host this week, who is Mr. Ian Fernander, who is a retired member of the Central Bank. He's also a business consultant and a publisher and involved in many aspects of the Bahamian community. And our guest of honor is Mr. Joseph Edgecombe, who is a senior interior architect designer, very well accomplished in his own right, and so are all of his children. We'll get into that. But we're here trying to speak a little bit about inspirational things. We're trying to talk about positivity. The media is overwhelming this country with negativity. This is an apolitical show, so we're not going there at all. We want to uplift the community, and we're going to talk about as many positive things, as many insights into the success of why these two young, I call them young, but the youthful gentlemen have accomplished in life. So first of all, good evening, Mr. Fernander.
Good evening, good evening.
And welcome and good evening, Mr.
Edgecombe. Yes, good evening.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Joseph Edgecombe, as an interior architect designer. It sounds like an interesting profession, but what exactly is an interior architect designer, Mr. Edgecombe?
Well, to be a good interior architect designer, you must have a broad perspective on the related a profession that relates to the profession, that is civil engineering, mechanical and electrical engineering.
And you have been involved in many very fundamental projects in the history of our country, including Phase 1 of Atlantis. Can you talk a little bit about your input and what role you played in Phase 1 of Atlantis?
Yeah. Phase 1 Atlantis, I was responsible for what they used to call the Britannia Beach Hotel. That consists of like 9 floors, and Atlantis, in my view, is still the most challenging project that this country has ever experienced, and it's a project matter that should be in the forefront of this country, because that project has resulted in the Bahamas to become internationally known worldwide.
It's definitely a jewel in the crown of our country and our history.
Yeah. Most definitely, yeah.
And a fundamentally important as an employer for our country as well.
Yeah. I have a question there though, Mr. Edgecombe. I guess maybe I should start with another question. What in your mind would you tell us is, what is Bahamian architecture? Is there such a thing?
Well, as an interior architect designer, you should have a broad-based perspective of historical architecture leading up to modern-day architecture. Our studies cover the history of architecture, which dates back centuries. And for you to be a good interior architect designer, you must have a view of the historical, how the profession are developed and where we are today.
Another important thing, you being here, is that you're a wonderful husband. You're a wonderful father. You're a wonderful Bohemian, a citizen through and through. Done so much for the community over the years. But just in terms of, there's so much negativity in our present generation in terms of the young, our next upcoming generation in terms of all their failings and all of what is going wrong. All the doom and the gloom. But there are so many bright sparks in the young doing great things across the world, academically, athletically. Your children are shining examples of that. So I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think there are a lot of young people who would be inspired to know some of the accomplishments of your children. Can we just get into that?
Yes. The three of my kids went through St. Andrews from preschool all the way through to university life. My son, Joseph, he graduated from the University of Florida at the age of 23 as a civil and an environmental engineer. He is presently working for a major engineering firm in the United States. And sometime in the future, he plans to return back to the Bahamas to, with the view of inspiring others to not to just leave the Bahamas and not return. He wants to encourage a lot of those who enter into all aspect of our professional life to return home to contribute to our beautiful country.
And you do have another son, you have a daughter as well, and they're just as accomplished.
Yes, next year my daughter will graduate from IE University in Madrid, Spain, with her a degree both as an architect and an engineer. And of course my youngest, Ruben, I refer to him as Ruben the scientist because he is a straight-A student in all the science, and his favorite subject is physics. And we have just been invited to his school in Tennessee because he is now being receiving special honors for his outstanding academic life as well as his athletic life. Within his school life there, he is also the captain of the soccer team for the school. So they all are doing great things, great accomplishment. And of course, I will be encouraging the three of my children to return back to the Bahamas to play a key role in the future of development of our country, which is needed. While we have so many lawyers, we don't seem to have enough of highly technical skill or Bahamians in the area of architecture, engineering, interior design, project managers, which the country needs to to the success of our country future our development.
Well, I'm very happy to hear that they're coming back. And I'm sure you're inspiring a lot of young people by relaying the stories of the success of your children. I'm glad that they are coming back. Because as Mr. Ian Fernandez and I have spoken many times, we can have the greatest success stories in our young people. If they don't come home, they're not going to provide success for our future as the for the Commonwealth of the Bahamas.
Yeah. Mr. Edgecombe, you mentioned that your daughter is doing architecture. Now, I believe...
And engineering. Right?
And engineering. Yeah. I believe then that there's not a lot of female architects in the Bahamas. Do you think that she would break the mold and become one of the prominent architects in the country, although she is female?
Yes, I think so.
That's a loaded question.
Yeah, I think so. She is very, very gifted as an artist, and she is also, while my two sons, they are gifted in the science. She is, while they are A students in the science, she is at least B student in the science. So that combination of being gifted as an artist and having a good perspective of the science that relates to the profession of architecture and engineering, I think she will indeed be an outstanding architect.
Okay. Well, sir, Mr. Edgecombe, you are a success yourself. Let's talk about what is the secret to success? What are some of the most important things that have happened to your life? And that includes some of the things that went wrong. So some of our greatest failings lead to some of our greatest strengths and our success. What are some of the integral things that happened in your life that led you on the path to the successful man that you are today?
Well, hard work, discipline, consistent, having a perspective that whenever you embark upon any given project matter, your concern should be for the interests of the client as well as for your company interests, or to make sure that whatever you are set out to accomplish for the client, you should have the view that it should be up to international standard. Because what used to be a big wide world has become a small place now. So my views on every future professional person should be of the mindset that I have to strive to attain the level of professionalism to my counterpart anywhere on the face of the globe. So if you have for any reason to be plucked out of this environment of the Commonwealth and transplanted anywhere on the face of this globe, you should be of the view that I have to function at the level of my counterpart anywhere in the world, because what used to be a big wide world has now become a small place. So
very well said, yes. Yeah. Yes. And looking at the history of this country, where did you go to high school?
Well, I'm a Long Islander by birth, and I left Long Island at the age of 16. I was sent here to the government high school. So all of my education was centered around the government school system, which back then we received a very, very good education.
But around that time, you were in the era where there was a lot of inequality, where black people weren't receiving the same job opportunities, educational opportunities. I guess from the mid to late 60s, things started to turn around. But what have you seen from being a teenager to now in terms of equal rights, equal opportunity for all Bahamians?
Well, I maintain a very clear perspective of the history of our country. And if we cast our perspective back to the 50s period, three great Bahamians, Taylor, Cartwright, and Stevenson, I think their friend was here, right here from The Guardian, they stress, at that point, they recognize that there was not equal rights and equal opportunities for every single Bahamian citizen. And I think that that should be the perspective that should sink deep in heart, mind, and spirit of our leaders here in the Bahamas, that there must be equal rights and equal opportunities for every single citizen of the Commonwealth, because all of our forefathers has contributed in the development of our beautiful country. So the emphasis should always be on equal rights and equal opportunities for every single citizen of the Commonwealth.
And it's very important to know where we came from so we know where we're headed, mm-hmm. and what the possibilities are. And now we have to always remember we have a beautiful country where there's no limit to what we can accomplish. And we take that for granted. I think even the young persons don't realize all the opportunity that they have, and a lot of them squander mm-hmm. that. And if you look at the history where we weren't always having that mm-hmm. opportunity, where women were not always allowed to vote, where persons who didn't own land weren't always allowed to vote, where black persons weren't allowed to vote or get an education or get a job in a business and be a manager, et cetera, or even think of becoming a lawyer or a doctor. We have to remember where we came and appreciate what we have accomplished in all the years.
Mr. Edgecombe, like you, the three men you mentioned, that's those three men who you mentioned as pioneers, and Stevenson, Cartwright,
Taylor.
And Taylor, they were Long Islanders.
Two of them were. Yeah.
That's Cartwright and Taylor.
Yes.
They were mostly Long Islanders. What was life like for you on Long Island as a young man before you came to Nassau? What was living like? Let us know.
I had a childhood life that was second to none. Both of my parents were devoted Christians, and they taught us above everything else that the most precious of all of God's creation here on earth is our fellow human mankind, and that we should treat everyone equal and encourage them also to strive to realize their God-given abilities so they can contribute to the future of our country.
And what part of Long Island did you grow up on?
McCann's.
Yeah. Long Island's really huge. People don't realize how big it is. It's pretty big. McCann's is in the south or the north or the middle?
Well, north central. One of my parents came from south central. The other came from north central. So I'm a pure Long Islander.
Okay. And what kind of things did you do as a boy?
Well, first and foremost, we had to fill every school assignment that was assigned to us. And once we have completed that, then we were allowed to have time to play with our friends, go to the beach, go fishing, of course, because we... Long Island on the south side is the Great Bahama Banks, and on the north is the Atlantic Ocean. So we used to take advantage of both sides of the water life there. And we used to raise a lot of fruits and vegetables, whole grain, and of course, summertime we used to help our families in the fields. So we were raised on very, very fresh fruits, vegetables, whole grain, meats, all of our food growing up was fresh.
You didn't have all that imported food back then.
No.
Well, Mr. Edgecombe, Mr. Joseph Edgecombe, were you the first member of your family to receive advanced education? What was the education background of your parents, for example?
Well, my mom together with her cousins, their aunt was a principal at the school, at the Old Edge School. So mom was a teacher at a very, very young age, together with her first cousin, Conrad Knowles. My dad, his family background was, his life background was navigation, going off to the United States. His older brothers were in the new United States, so he went to the United States to be with them and do farming and all that stuff in other U.S.
What would you say, sir, with the success of your life, what do you think are some of the most important decisions that you ever made?
Well, very important is to get a very broad-based education, especially in the art as well as the science. To be a good, well-rounded a professional person, you must aim to have a broad-based education, especially in other science.
Well, I'll say something that I've heard it many times, and I think I can attest to, and I'll do a little bit of a personal history. Just yesterday, I was in office all day, and I saw three patients, and of course, the customary thing would be is, how are you doing? How is life? How is your family? What can I do to help you? And three of them were going through a divorce, all of them in their late 50s or early 60s. And that was the most devastating thing.
That's
far worse than any medical condition could ever.
Well, we have a 60% rate or something like that.
Exactly that. And they were, how unhappy they were for 80% of their adult life, and how they're going to have to start all over again, losing everything in the divorce and everything else. And I had another patient. I was almost late to coming to the radio today because another divorcee was telling me about his trials and tribulations. And he mentioned it, and I've heard it many times, and I've said it myself. I think the most important decision that a person, male or female, can make in their life is their choice of a life partner, even more important than their education or any other endeavor that they may choose to follow. I mean, the right partner can inspire you, can propel you to greatness, and provide you peace. Peace is integral to happiness in life. Serenity, support, and love. And the wrong person can absolutely destroy you. I mean, finding someone who aligns with your values, who possesses empathy, who loves you with all their heart, supports your goals, that wants the same things in life. If you find your, as they say, the young people say, your ride or die, who pushes you to be better than you ever thought was possible every single day. I wouldn't be a urologist today if it wasn't for my wife. It was such a grueling in residency that if it wasn't for her and wanting for me to stick it out because I wanted better for her and for ourselves and our future children, I wouldn't be a urologist today. I wouldn't be on the radio now if she hadn't give back to the community. I think you have the same sentiment, Mr. Ian Fernandez.
And I would like to add to that. You brought out a point because you're talking about divorces and you meet so many men, and sometimes we forget that some simple things are important to men. This is a show. This is a kind of man show anyway, and you brought out the point about peace. So I'd like to ask Mr. Edgecombe. Mr. Edgecombe, you know, men like to have peace, and it sounds like such a simple thing, but where did you and how did you find peace in your home life and your work life and all of those lies? Because the lack of peace is what's driving a lot of men crazy today.
Yes. Well, like everything else, marriage life is not perfect. So one have to strive and make every effort to work things through, especially in the life of your children. I think before anyone think seriously about a divorce, they should also think about the children involved and the negative impact that a divorce could have upon the life of their children, especially if the children have an equal love for both of the parents. So everyone should, before they think about the subject of divorce, they should try and work things out. Most importantly, have a forgiving heart. Bear in mind the future of family life that relates to the home, mother, father, children. So before one should really, really think very deeply about the divorce matter, every single effort should be made to reconcile and to ensure that this decision would not drastically affect the historical future of the family life.
And just as important, or even more important, actually, is to marry the right person to begin with. We spoke about peace. I think that inner peace is the new rich. Inner peace is the greatest gift to achieve in life. Life will definitely always humble you, but the older one gets, I'm middle-aged, the less importance you have in material things in your life. So as you age, your greatest possessions will always be peace of mind.
And contentment.
contentment, yeah. Being with family, a good night's rest. You cannot put enough value on that. The happiness derived from helping others, the community.
Yes.
Deep conversations with people who actually love you. So the greatest treasures in this life are receiving love, giving love, and peace. Peace. You need to come home and you need to have peace and tranquility and support. And there's not enough of that out in this community. And there's a breakdown of the nuclear family because of it.
Yeah. and we seem to have gotten into our spirit. This is something I've seen since I've been a kid in the Bahamas. We seem to have grown this propensity, this a bit of love almost for conflict, almost as if it's a sport. We gravitate towards conflict as a people. So, Mr. Edgecombe, talk to us a little bit about how we as a people may want to look at conflict and moving ourselves away from conflict more to being collaborative, which is how we used to be. We used to be a people who collaborated with each other more, but now we seem to be driving towards the default is to have a conflict with someone.
Well, I think one of the biggest problem in the country today is the citizen of the Bahamas needs to reflect upon the historical family life throughout the Commonwealth of Bahamas. Years ago, the word of the wars was almost like a curse word. So I think everyone should come back to reality that a good family life must be centered around our Christian values, the importance of family unity, family support, helping others, encouraging others along a positive road of peace.
And we speak about the most important things in life. We're talking a little bit about life and being successful. I think after peace, time is one of the life's most precious commodities. I've heard this saying, if you imagine that every morning you wake up and you receive $86,400 in your bank account every single morning, and you can do whatever you want with that money, but when you put your head on the pillow and you go to sleep that night, whatever money you didn't use just disappears. And then when you wake up the next morning, you have another $86,400 to do whatever you want within that day. And then again, when you go to sleep, all of that money goes away. So obviously, any individual is going to use every second, every cent of that dollar to of that $86,400 because it's going to go away if you don't make use of it. There are 86,400 seconds in every day. So for every second, we need to make use of it and make sure that we use it for something that's valuable and momentous in our life, because we never get those seconds back.
Never get it
back. Never get it back. I think when we're on our deathbed, we're not going to think about how many late hours we had in the office. We're not going to think about how much money we accomplished or what awards we got in our profession. We're going to think about our legacy, what we left behind with our children, our grandchildren, the mother.
The quality time we spent with our wife, our friends, the
lasting memories we had with our children. And I think we don't emphasize the importance of family enough in this country. It goes far beyond any wealth that you can attain. The love of your wife, the love of your children, the love of your family and your friends far exceeds any monetary value.
Yeah, and you brought up an important point about time. I think we've moved away from having a huge amount of respect for time. We love to waste time. So you'll find persons, they will leave work on a Friday night and they will spend the entire night until the morning somewhere getting wasted, which is a waste of time, while it might be fun. Then you have youngsters not understanding that they have a limited time on earth. You might be 15, but you don't have forever. So you really do have to start thinking, even at 12, 13, 14, 15, about what is my purpose? What am I going to be doing here on this earth? Because I don't have forever to do it. And I don't know if enough of us are thinking that way when we're that age. And some people go into their 40s and 50s and don't even get to be thinking that way.
There's a saying that goes that one of the secrets to success in life, the wealthiest people are private, the happiest people are free, the smartest people are quiet, and the blessed people are grateful. I think that's a wonderful saying.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mr. Edgecombe.
Yeah. Well, I must confess to the country that definitely I am blessed by Almighty God Himself, because from humble beginnings, I've had the opportunity to work for companies from all over the world. I do not credit myself for the opportunity. I see it purely as a blessing from the Almighty God Himself, because I've worked for companies as far away as China, Canada, various parts of Europe. I remember the challenge that I had, the opportunity that was extended to me from Coutts out of England. I was appointed to assist in introducing modern-day technology at Coutts, where the office of the Prime Minister is today. And I never imagined that I would have the opportunities that I've had throughout my life had I not been realistic of the truth that I am blessed by the Almighty God Himself.
Very, very well said. And humble beginnings, you talk about humble beginnings. Your circumstances do not define you or your future. In fact, it can allow you to have a greatest strength by knowing that if you believe in yourself, anything is possible. I spoke about my own maternal grandparents. My maternal grandmother only went to grade 5 in terms of education. My maternal grandfather only went to grade 1. He started as a water boy on a construction site at the British Colonial. And he went on to develop his own real estate company. He was a very important contractor in this country. He was able to retire in his 50s and become very successful. He educated all 11 of his children, made sure they all received university education, although he never went beyond grade 1 and had to teach himself to read. I have one of my favorite uncle, Dr. Lawrence Davis, went on to get a PhD in nuclear science in an age, in a time when black men were not doing that, and he went on to work for NASA. One of my other uncles, Dr. Anthony Davis, was one of the first black Bahamian dentists. My favorite aunt, Marjorie Davis, was the first female director of education in the Bahamas. So there's so many great things that you can accomplish, but just because you were born in humble circumstances doesn't mean that the sky is not the limit.
Good point. Good point. In fact, what we are blaming a lot of our ills today on people being born in humble circumstances, when in fact, if you roll back the clock, I'm always rolling back the clock to the days of Mr. Edgecombe, and even you know, in my lifetime, the majority of Bahamians were born in humble circumstances. And it's those same very Bahamians who became prime ministers and doctors and nurses and teachers and everything that we have today has been built in this country, has been built largely by people who came from humble circumstances. So it's a bit of an oxymoron that today we say that if someone is that people from humble circumstances are a problem or a part of the problem, or we have them believing that being in a humble circumstances are a hindrance to them, when in fact this country is made mostly by people who came from humble circumstances.
So if you look at almost every successful person in this country, it was either one generation before or two generations before that, they were very humble. They had outhouses, there were maids, there were gardeners. Many of the senior surgeons that I admire and are my mentors, they'll speak openly that their mother was a maid, or their mother used to sell food on the side of the road, and it didn't stop them. In fact, their mothers inspired them to achieve greatness, because they knew the hard road that they faced, they wanted better for their children.
Yes.
So it should never hold you back. We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Hey, a pleasure. Good afternoon, doctor, and good afternoon to your panelists as well.
Good afternoon. Good evening.
You know, there's a saying that goes like this. You know, when we had less, we did more.
Very true.
We have more, we're doing less.
Hmm.
Somebody also said that, you know, we try to give our children the things that we didn't have, that we didn't have, rather giving them the things that we have. You know, a child that is born in today's world, you know, he has a tablet, he or she has this, they have designer clothes, they have their own bedrooms, they have their own TVs, they have their own this and that and so on and so forth. And, you know, but do they have the work ethics? Do they have the manners and the discipline that's needed to be a good citizen? So, you know, I think it's sometimes a double-edged sword. You know, you don't want your children to work as hard as you do and so on and so forth. But then sometimes, not all the times, a lot of times, the children don't appreciate what you would have done. And this generation today, some of them, they feel entitled.
You're correct.
Certain things. You know, even look at our schools. You know, back in the day, you had to fight to get into a government high. You had to fight for a seat. You had to fight. But there's no more fight no more. There's no more fight. You don't have to fight for it. Education is free now. And yet people don't take advantage of it. So, I worked in a financial institution back in the day as a teller. And we had to get up and run and to check the ledgers and to check this and that. Now they got these people sitting down in front of computers and, like, you know, they're doing less. The lines are long. There's no sense of urgency. There's nothing, you know. And so... I don't know.
Yeah, I was a teller once, and I remember not too long ago being in the bank and having the teller like, look, in my day when there was no computer, if I took as long as you did to serve a customer, I would have been fired.
We had to, like I said, this was in 79 back then. And we had to go to the ledger, we had to check the signature, we had to get it verified, it was above. And when there were Fridays, when there were other companies who would come in the bank, and we knew that there was a line, even the manager, she would get up and she'd take a till sheet. But just no, you know, we have more, but we're doing less. And just the productivity level, we have technology, we have all these other things, and yet the productivity level.
So what do you think is this? What do you think is a solution for that?
You know, I think it's a combination of things. We have to change the mindset of our people, and I think we have become so westernized in a lot of instances where we see things that are, you know, on the television, and we assume that that's the way it should be, and so on and so forth. But, you know, we have to instill in our people, because I know that after the after 1967 and this change of government, and there was all this inspiration that, you know, you no longer have to be hewers of woods and the toters of water and so on and so forth. And so, you know, I taught O-levels history for a couple of years. And I know that after emancipation, you know, the slaves' parents, they didn't want the children to work on the field anymore. Mm-hmm. And so they wanted the white-collar jobs like the Englishmen. They moved away from an agrarian society, and that is how you have the importation of the Indians and the Chinese in order to fill that gap. And so, you know, nobody want to get their hands dirty, so to speak. Everybody want to be in air condition, everybody, you know. But some of these jobs are in the so-called outside of the profession of, you know, everybody wants to be a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant. We have so many doctors, lawyers, and accountants and whatnot. And, you know, but we need plumbers and electricians, and these are the jobs that are paying sometimes even more than the doctors. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to teach our city. You know, it's everybody's not going to be smart. Everybody don't have this. God has given us different abilities and whatever abilities that you've been given, that you know them, and to teach them the value of doing something. And doing it well, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, very well said, and obviously hardship builds character. It builds strength as well. And
But,
I think,
most of the millionaires who made it in the U.S. and other places, you know, a lot of times you see these people who come from the from the poorest of country, they come to the U.S., they come to the Bahamas, they see opportunities that we, I mean, that are here, and they are prepared to work for $5, but they know back in their country they were getting 10 cents an hour, whatever, you know. And so they know the value of a $5, but they take that $5 and they multiply that, they pool their resources, and they do things. So we need to learn from others as well. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Very thought-provoking words. But I think we have not just this country, but we have a society of instant gratification. They want everything right away. They want success right away. They don't want to toll in the fields. They don't want to climb that mountain. They don't want to fall down 10 times to get up 11 times. They want everything right away. The only way you can do that is a drug deal. And what's the life expectancy of a drug dealer? Is it worth breaking your heart of your mother when you do the bank lane shuffle and she visits you in jail for the next 15, 20 years? It's not worth it. So, I mean, in this society, there's a lot of jealousy. There's a lot of envy. I think that's one of the downfalls of our country. We're not happy enough for our own. There's too much of a black crab syndrome. That's why we're happy to spend hundreds of million dollars on consultants that take money out the country when we have vastly qualified Bahamians who do the same thing. If they don't live in this country, they may be somewhere else in this country, but they can do the same thing. But we don't want to give to our own.
And we don't want to listen to ourselves either.
Exactly.
There's a bit of self-hate.
Exactly. I mean, everyone is jealous of what you get, but nobody is jealous of how you get it. I mean, they don't want to hear about the sweat, the tears, the failure, the endless sacrifice that it takes to achieve some level of success. So people see the trophies, but not the training ground. Everybody wants the view of the top of the mountain, but not the climb to get there. And it's a jagged, difficult climb to get to that mountain.
Well, there is an old proverb that goes, time and tide waits for no man. In many instances, when citizens here in this country come to the reality of what they could have achieved and they did not achieve, it's because they didn't seem to value the importance of time and making the best use of time that relates to their talent, their ability, the sacrifices, discipline, for them to realize what they can reflect back on with regrets, because that old proverb about time and tide waits for no man.
But Mr. Edgecombe, talking about time, there's a question for you. The typical young person today is spending, let's be kind, and say maybe about 50% of their time on social media. Might be a bit less, might be a bit more, but let's say 50%. Someone who has spent a great portion of their life just captured by this environment, how do you get them to pivot to understanding that their time can be used productively?
I think, yeah, as you said, there's too much mindless effort put into Facebook, Instagram, TikTok by young persons. How is it that our society or our generation glorifies influencers instead of our teachers, instead of our pastors or our ministers or even our parents? They're glorifying rappers who glorify the degradation of women or violence towards women or the use of drugs or alcohol. So our society is in deep trouble. It's not our society alone, but society across the world. And I don't know the answer to that. We talk about strength. It's important to be strong because you're always going to have tremendous hurdles that you're going to face in life. So we talk about strength in life. We talk about weak people. We talk about strong people. What's the difference between being a weak person and a strong person? I'll give some for example. For example, a weak person will notice other people's mistakes and laugh or make fun of them or use it to bring them down. And strong people notice other people's mistakes and learn from it to make themselves a stronger person. Weak people tend to talk about other person's problems to feel better about themselves. But strong people talk about others' problems to become better in themselves. Weak people, which is, I think, very important to say, envy people ahead of them. So anyone is they perceive as accomplishing more than they have in their life, they're very envious, very jealous, wishing the worst upon them. That defines a lot of our Bahamian society, unfortunately. But strong people study people who are ahead of them so they themselves can emulate their success. Mm-hmm. And there's not enough of that. So if you see someone down the road who has 3 successful businesses and 2 homes in Lifeaki, maybe you should go and speak to them and what was your journey? How did you get to the place you are? Can you give me some inspiring words? Can you give me some guidance in my life? Instead of hating on them and wishing harm upon them because they've accomplished something, not yet realizing all the hell and tribulations that they had to go through to achieve that.
Which makes me want to ask Mr. Achcom. Mr. Achcom, once you started working in your field, how long do you think it took before you would say you called yourself a bit successful?
Well, to be successful, you cannot be of the mindset to be a clock time watcher. A tremendous amount of time has to go into your professional life, a lot of success, sacrifice. In my profession, there were times when I had to work as long as 18 hours, especially in a challenging project. I remember in Atlantis Phase 1, back in 93, 94, I worked many, many months for as much as 12 to 18 hours. So to be successful, call out for a lot of time. And in the process of being successful, you should also aim to reach for a higher level in your discipline. Reach for opportunities that would broaden your God-given ability in whatever your life or profession is all about. But most importantly, you have to be consciously aware that it's going to call out for a lot of time, sacrifice, and in the process of it all, you must realize that the number one resources of becoming successful is you have to be consciously aware of those persons that you are working with and their value and their contribution, and you should aim at sharing your knowledge and ability with them. Because no matter what your chosen profession is, there is something that you could learn from. Mm-hmm. So we should always be of that mindset.
And it's always important to have a work-life-family balance.
Yep.
That's fundamentally important. I have many seniors who told me that as their children go off to university, they wish they had spent more time with them. They wish they would give up several zeros in their bank account. They would give up some of the houses that they've acquired just to have that time back with their children, because you can never gain that back. And that means more, particularly as you get older, than all the wealth in the world, all the materialism in the world. And you just can never get that back.
Yeah, you have some parents, very sensible people, who get to a place where they realize that they have really never formed a good enough relationship with their children so that they can have a regular conversation with them.
Yeah,
and that's incredible.
It's important to realize what is important. If you're working hard for your family, I fully support that, but you also have to realize that if all you do is work, you're losing the other aspect, which might even be the most important aspect of your life, and that's spending time with your family and loving your family and those golden years when your children are young before they go off and become adults themselves. You can never, ever gain that back again.
Mm-hmm. I started off, Mr. Etchkin, by asking you about architecture. I want to sort of roll back to that a bit. What do you think, if anything, is one of the most important or relevant parts of Bahamian architecture? What do you think is important to us that you can say, hey, this is a huge thing in Bahamian architecture or Bahamian design?
Most of the architecture of the design of our era is more or less centered around modern design. But a designer should have a broad-based perspective of a design as a whole, traditional, not so modern. And if you ask me, what is a good design? A good design is one that is most practical and functional to the need designated. Whatever that need is, you should strive to make sure that if you are designing for a client, whatever their business is all about, you should strive to make sure it's most practical and functional to the need designated so that that client could realize their return on their personal investment. Because if you come up with a design that is not practical and functional to the need designated, then you will be not performing what your client hired you to do.
So Mr. Etchkin, if I think I'm smart and well-educated and I know what I want, why would I pay someone like you to design something for me? And I think in my heart, you know what, I know what I want. I know how to design this myself. Why should someone pay someone like you to create something for them?
Well, over the long term, it would be for their own success in their business, because if one attempt to do a project whereby they do not have the broad-based training and experience.
And just in that, from the perspective of structural integrity and sustaining hurricanes and et cetera, you have to have the insight and the education and the skill.
And that's the case for pretty much most professionals and most professions, for people to understand that the person who is in that profession has a level of training and experience and gravitas that you may think that you are okay with what you understand, but it's highly unlikely that that person does not have a greater grasp of things than you do. And that's one of the reasons why you may want to check with professionals when you have something to solve.
And let's just move to another topic we were starting with earlier in the start of the radio show. You have three very successful children. What can you tell young parents who have maybe a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 6-year-old? How can they instill values in their children so they can be successful like your children?
Well, the guideline to any child's success is to spend time with them, making sure in the process of spending time they gain a very, very broad perspective of knowledge that relates to so many different areas of life. History. Lots of time you should spend with them, educating them of what long-term success is all about, is hard work, understanding exactly what you are doing, the importance of having a very, very broad base education so that whatever their future goal is in terms of our professional life, they would have a good foundation to achieve whatever they want to achieve in the long-term future. And that kind of mindset should be inspired from they are young all the way through to them entering high school and college life.
Mr. Edgecombe, you sound like you may be suggesting, I'm putting words in your mouth, that the current sort of character of our educational system, which is pushing kids towards specialization at a very fairly young age, that maybe that needs to be thought about. Because you keep bringing up that a person should have a broad-based education. But we tend to be pushing people at very young ages into specializing as opposed to specializing later. Tell us a bit more what you mean by a broad-based education.
Well, a broad-based education call out for one to have a view of nature.
Well-rounded athletics. I know your son is in athletics as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Serving the community is also very important. That gives you a sense of fulfillment a lot of young people are lacking.
The arts is a part of it as well.
Being immersed in the culture of our country, whether that's junk canoe or music.
One thing that I have really come to experience in our country, our Bahamians are naturally intelligent. I don't know if it's the food, the water, whatever it is. I've found a lot of them to be quick learners, naturally intelligent. They pick up on subject matters very quickly. So there should be the system should be consciously aware that our Bahamians, for some reason, I have found them to be naturally intelligent, so we should grasp that and build upon it for the good of the future of our country.
This hour has gone very quickly. We have to have you back again, Mr. Joseph Edgecombe, interior architect designer. Mr. Ian Fernander, any closing remarks or thoughts?
Well, it's good to sit here with Mr. Edgecombe. I've known him for quite a long time, and he's definitely an example of a man who has put a lot of work into his life and
made
a lot of contributions to the society. In fact, contributions that people sit in and work in and made a huge difference to the lives of people. So thank you, Mr. Edgecombe, for that.
Yes, we do thank you. Any closing remarks to the nation, Mr. Edgecombe?
Well, closing remark is that it should be in the center of all of the leaders in this country that there should be equal rights and equal opportunities to every single citizen of this country, because all of our forefathers built this beautiful country, and no matter what your political persuasion may be, is at all times the leaders of this country must bear in mind that equal rights and equal opportunity must be extended to every single citizen of this country. Because again, I can't say it enough, all of our forefathers have built this beautiful country.
Very well said. My quick closing remarks are, what we give doesn't always return, but what we give is always what we are. So at the end of the day, what you offer the world, what you offer the community, the Bahamas and others, your love, your kindness, your thoughtfulness, all reflect who you are and your character. So never give something just to get back. Give because that is who you are, because that is who God would like you to be. The strongest people are not those who show strength in front of us, but who are those who win the battles that we know nothing about. So everyone in life is going through something that we can't see. So let us give each other some grace, some love, some support and understanding. Let's be better to each other, Bahamas, and we'll have a better country. Have a safe week, and we'll speak again next week, Wednesday, on The Urologist Speaks. Good evening.
Live stronger, with the help of God, man, we live.